Hello and welcome to the NFL Players Podcast. I am Aeneas Williams. Our guest today is NFL legend and former linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers, Keena Turner. Keena will be talking about his journey from the gridiron to college graduation after 40 years. Let's listen in. All right, Keena, I don't know if anyone's ever had the guts to ask you, where does your name come from?
Yeah, I tell you, man, that's always been a storyline for me. And here's where I'll start. So my brother's name is Michael Anthony Turner. So how do you go from, you know, the pretty common to Keena? And the story is my dad was actually in the service and he was actually overseas when I was born. And so it was left up to mom to do on her own. And there was a little Indian boy on a television program that she heard and liked, and that was it. And right, and no middle name, right? Because what do you follow Keena with, thankfully? And
no middle name,
right? Wow. And so along the way growing up, you know, I was Kenneth, Keno, Kenny, Tina. That was the big one, all right? I was Tina everywhere I went, right? So, and you look, it's got to be the same for you, though, Aeneas. I mean, you have a very different name, man. Too.
Come on, man. Don't even get into calling me Aeneas, man.
Yeah.
She dropped the mic, so it wasn't a musician. It was your mother watching a program, a little Indian young man. His name was Keena, and that's right. Where she got it from.
Yeah. And over the years, you know, I've gotten some communication from folks who actually did a little history, found the program, found the little Indian boy, and have sent me kind of the movie or the show that he showed up in. And so I've definitely over the years come to embrace it and actually love it.
Well, being on the defense with that team, and we'll talk about that great dynasty that you're a part of. You had pretty much a lot of no names. I know Ronnie was there, Ronnie Lott, but you had some no names. So what was it like having that unusual name stand out on that defense? Was that a plus for you?
Well, I don't know if it was a plus, man, but you hit it right on the head, Aeneas, when you talk about, you know, your teammates and the team, because that's really what it was all about. And I just was fortunate to play with a lot of great players. You mentioned Ronnie and Fred Dean, I mean, and Eric Wright, you know, and there was five of us that kind of played on all four teams together, along with Joe and Mike Wilson. And so, you know, we had a core group, right? And we had some other great players that came along throughout the years for us that did an unbelievable job. And, you know, with Bill at the lead, you know, with the philosophy that was put in place and the foundation, you know, things turned out okay.
You know, it was interesting. What was it like, Keena, being a part of a team that was in formation? It's always, I joined the Rams 2 years after they won their first Super Bowl, but you literally are part of the draft class, you and Ronnie, 23 years old, playing with Coach Bill Walsh, who's in his formation. Tell us what that was like to be a part of building.
Yeah.
What I call an excavation.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, my rookie year, we went 6-10 and we lost 8 games in a row, right? Somewhere in that stretch. And so I came the year before Ronnie. And so Ronnie and Eric and that group come in my second year. And then we take off and win that first Super Bowl, Super Bowl 16. And
your so second for, year.
Yeah, my second year, right. And so our formation happened really over those 3 years for me. My first year, we went 6-10. My second year, we go 13-3, I think, and win a Super Bowl. But the very next year, we went 3-6 in a strike-shortened year and didn't make the playoffs, had to beat the Rams the last game of the season, lost that game, didn't make the playoffs. And so that was a part of our formation, realizing that you win it, right? You kind of think you've arrived, but you realize every year is singular to itself, right? And so we had to climb back up that mountain. And my third year, then we lose to the Redskins in the NFC Championship game. And that was a part of the formation. And then we come back my fourth year and win it again in Super Bowl 19, which was obviously set us up right in terms of the rest of my years with the Niners in terms of our, you know, our attitude, our philosophy and our approach.
So your rookie year, when did Bill Walsh get there? Was he already there when you got there?
Yeah, so Bill came in 79, okay. and I came in 80, and Joe came in 79. So Joe was there the year before me. Mm-hmm. And we had Steve DeBerg, my rookie year, as our quarterback, and Joe started to play just a little bit that year. And then obviously the next year, Joe took off and kind of the rest is history.
All right. So give us these opticals. You're watching this. Coach Bill Walsh already there a year or so before you. Did you see something special happening when you were drafted there initially?
Well, here's what I knew when I walked in the door. Right. So, you know, Joe was at Notre Dame and I was at Purdue.
Right.
And so we're playing Notre Dame. I think it's Joe's senior year. Right. And we're banging them, Aeneas. We got them. Right. We got our hands around their neck, man. We just about have it out of them. Right. And Joe's a third string quarterback for Notre Dame.
Third string.
We put the first guy out. He wasn't playing well enough. They brought the second guy in. We broke his collarbone. They took him out, put the first guy back in. He couldn't get it done. Finally, somewhere around the end of the third quarter, they looked down there and put Joe in, right? And Joe came in and beat us and went on and won a national championship or something, and then, you know, and set himself up, gets drafted in the third round by the 49ers. So when I walked in the door as a rookie, I said, well, I don't know about everybody else, but I know who that dude is. I know what that dude is capable of, right? Wow. So I don't know if I felt all of that early on, but I knew we had a quarterback that in crunch time could play. Wow. And then obviously the rest of the pieces came together.
And Coach Bill Walsh, being an offensive-minded coach, obviously, did you see this kicking off with him?
Well, and yeah, I don't know if I mean, as a young guy, I don't know if I saw all that, but what I did see was our early formation of an approach, right? Bill was focused on perfection of his offense, right? And Mike Holmgren told this story once about working for Bill about a day in practice where Bill, you know, Joe was dropping back, just, you know, throwing some deep goals, right? And Dwight takes off, Joe throws a go, and Mike Holmgren says, man, nice throw. And Bill walks by and said, no, it wasn't. You know, Dwight had to turn just a little bit, right? And Bill walked by and said, remember, I want the ball 10 inches away from his chest. Wow. And that was the way Bill coached every day, right? The offense ran plays over and over because he was looking for perfection. And I think that was kind of a part of kind of who we were. It was never enough. You never quite got it right. Even when you won a Super Bowl, you still felt like there was something missing because it wasn't perfect. And you had to stay on that edge to constantly achieve and get better. So, I mean, I don't know that I saw that as a young player, mm-hmm. but looking back, I think that's what developed in us in our approach. And then, you know, Hall of Famers make the difference, man. If you got some of them on your team, you got a chance, right? And we were fortunate to have a few.
Now, when did you come in contact with this guy that's known as Catching Bricks back in Mississippi?
Yeah.
So Jerry Rice, Mississippi Valley State.
Yeah.
What was it like when you first saw him in practice?
Yeah, well, Jerry came along and, you know, there were a couple things at play. We were already a successful team, right? We had won two Super Bowls by the time Jerry got in the building. And so I think who he was as an athlete and a player and what we were as a team and an organization made sense to him. And, you know, the guy that I think influenced Jerry the most and a ton in the very beginning was a guy by the name of Roger Craig. And Roger Craig was an animal, man, when it came to conditioning and being prepared and how you approach the game and being a team guy. you know, Roger was, you know, was everything that you wanted. And Jerry just attached to Roger's, you know, approach. You know, Jerry obviously gets remembered for his, you know, his work habits. But a lot of that came from what he saw in Roger when he walked in the door. You know, in practice, whenever Roger touched the ball, he went to the goal line. He went to the end zone. And you look around, and whenever Jerry touched the ball, they went to the end zone every time they touched the ball. And Jerry was constantly catching the ball when he wasn't in on an offensive series. So he would, you know, he would catch from the, you know, the equipment guys, whenever he wasn't in, that's all he did. And when it went to Steve Young, we had a left-handed, you know, equipment guy that Jerry would catch balls from. So they just never quit working to be perfect in this Bill Walsh idea of how you approached it. So yeah, Jerry came in and just, I mean, you know, it's all recorded now about who he was and the type of player that he was. You know, Steve Young tells this story about when they won the Super Bowl in 94 and how after it was all over, you know, a few weeks later, he came in the locker room to clean out his locker and he heard some noise out back. And he's like, who's here? You know, and he opens up and looks out on the field and Jerry's out there running routes. Right. So a few weeks after the Super Bowl. So I think, you know, when you, you know, like you, this, you know, you want to be the best, man, you got to work at it. And, you know, you and the guys that I had the opportunity to play with had that same kind of attitude.
You know, it's interesting. I read Coach Bill Walsh's book, The Making of Champions. And that's when I read in that book the story you just told me. So literally after I read that, Kena, every interception, every fumble recovery, I ran back full speed, got to the nearest sideline, every practice, literally, where it became, under Coach Lovey, at least with the Rams, it became, that's what we did. As I always thought, is it any wonder how Jerry shattered the record, right? Yeah. We don't know if that'll ever be caught, someone ever break that record. But when people ask me, they say, what was it like catching two interceptions in a divisional round against the Packers, against Brett Favre? I always tell them, just like practice. Right. Because literally learning that from what Jerry was doing, and Bill put it in his book. Here's a question for you, Kena. Having the success that you've had, playing in a dynasty, in essence, for a dynasty, how was it transitioning? What was that like in terms of transitioning from that level of excellence and then into the next phase of your life?
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, it had its challenges. You know, I think a lot of guys that reach, you know, like myself, you reach that point in your career where, you know, you don't have many more snaps left. For me, I had an ACL in like my eighth year. So, you know, after that, I kind of knew my days were numbered, but I still wasn't prepared, you know. And I think physically it's easier to get to a point where, you know, you can't do it anymore. And mentally you kind of get in line with that. I think the tough part becomes emotionally, you know, how you handle the adjustment emotionally. And that becomes more than just mentally, you know, accepting it. And I struggled with that, you know, struggled with the idea of what do I do and, you know, what will I be known for now and where do you get started? And I think I had to learn and accept that makeup of, you know, wanting to be good at what you do, willing to put the work in to whatever it is, you know, stays with you. And that transitions, right? That attitude that, you know, I'm not going to be outworked. I'm going to show up. I'm going to be the right team. All of those things transition into whatever you decide is your next phase. But I think it takes, you know, it takes some time in the adjustment to accept that and go fight for it and stay in the game, as Ronnie would say. You know, you gotta, you know, you can't go on the sideline. You gotta be in the game. And I think that attitude, you know, I was fortunate enough along the way to meet a lot of great people that supported, assisted, directed, and you know, helped me get to the right place.
So as you, because you shared with me earlier, you said, okay, I went to work with Bill Walsh, Coach Walsh at Stanford. You work with your former teammate, Ronnie Lott, within the car business.
Right.
You said you've had this your third stint with the 49ers. How would you encourage today's player, the current players, on what they should be thinking or the legend? How do they now find that next passion?
Yeah.
What advice would you have?
Well, I think one, just like young folks in college, you don't necessarily have to know what you want to do.
Right.
You have to be committed to searching for it, and that whatever you're doing and staying busy and trying all kinds of different things. Don't say no. Put all your effort in and start to, you know, whittle down to what you really enjoy and you can focus on. But it's okay not to know what you want to do as you search. As long as you're searching, as long as you're willing to work and put the time in, it will come clear to you. And so for me, it was about taking advantage of some opportunities that were presented. Mm-hmm. And looking back, I wish I'd have taken advantage of more of them in terms of opportunities and not gotten in my own head that maybe there was a reason I couldn't do something. But enjoy those moments and go after it with full velocity like you did as an athlete and a player, and just look to get better every single day.
Can you give me an example? You said, looking back, there were some opportunities that I should have, that I talked myself out of it. Can you give us an example?
Yeah, I mean, there were moments in this, and, you know, I can remember I, you know, was asked to do the 4th of July Lincoln's portrait, and I did it. And I can remember, you know, doing a movie scene with Michael Douglas, and I did it. But there were all these other times of opportunities, maybe like that, mm-hmm. or, you know, or maybe business meetings I didn't take, or people I didn't meet, you know, or I didn't make time for because I wasn't focused enough at times. I don't want to live life that there's regrets, but there are definitely things I'd have done differently. You know, my first time around at Purdue, I didn't graduate because I wasn't focused on school. And so there are those opportunities in life,
right,
that, you know, you want to be able to be, you know, take a full advantage of. I was fortunate that things worked a certain way for me, but, you know, that's what I would have done a little bit differently.
So the college kids that are going to hear this podcast, the Players Podcast, what do you say to them?
Yeah, I think I'll start by saying it's never too late, right? I mean, 42 years later, I was able to go back and accomplish something that was always there for me, hanging out there for me, unfinished business for me in a way. And so it's never too late to do good things. It's never too late to do the right things, those right things that you feel are important for you. You know, one of the wonderful things that's come out of this for me is I've had a couple of young players come up to me and say, hey, I saw your story. That's so wonderful. And it's made me think about my journey, you know, and wanting to go back and finish. And that made me feel so good that they would see that in the story. Right. And I tell them, I say, hey, man, it's just, you know, how would you eat an elephant? You know, you eat him one bite at a time. And that's the approach, right? No matter how much is left to do, it's simply taking, you know, steps toward it to get to the end.
Now, we buried the lead this because you went back, got your degree from Purdue, except you walked with your middle child, Ella?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
No, please, what was that like?
Unbelievable, man. I mean, that, you know, people asked me, you know, that a couple interviews before the graduation when I was back in West Lafayette, and they said, hey, tell us your most memorable moment at Purdue. And I said, well, I'm pretty sure it's going to happen this coming Saturday. And looking back on it, it was an unbelievable moment, Aeneas. I mean, obviously it was a very special day whenever you have, one of your kids graduate, right? So to be there for her special day and to be there in that way, to walk into a stadium I played my college career in and to sit and watch her and then be a part of it because I've accomplished something that was, you know, a goal of mine that was unfinished business. So all of that culminating on that day was so very special. My kids being born are the highlights for me, but that day is somewhere around there, you know. It's it was very, very cool.
Okay. How did you cry? What was it like? Because I'm getting emotional.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I didn't that day. But I have since, you know, and just replaying the moment, you know, and we had a little get together right after the graduation where, two or three families down in West Lafayette had kids that graduated and we got together. And that was a very touching moment because all the graduates kind of went around talking about how special the day was. And for me to talk about it right after, so soon after, was just very moving, right? And I still get moved when I see the pictures. And I have to admit to you, man, I've been looking at the pictures from that day over and over, man. I can't get enough of them, right? And to see the smile on my daughter's face and the rest of the family being there supporting it all. You know, we missed my oldest daughter. She couldn't get away that time, but it was so, so cool. A moment I'll never, ever, ever forget.
Now, did you go back and spend time in a classroom or were you able to do most of it online?
Yeah, most of it, you know, and the rest of the story about kind of how we got there is, I actually went back to school. Dr. Harry Edwards and Bill started a degree completion program at the Niners while I was playing. And so I started the program. And then when I went to Stanford, I finished. And so I actually had my degree from USF in San Francisco. So the Purdue degree was just unfinished business from my wife is where it started. Right. She's like, you got to go back and finish right. at Purdue. I mean, that's right. where you started. So she started this project 12 years ago, wanting to kind of surprise me around my 50th birthday. It didn't work out. The kids were getting older. It moved around on the priority list. And then my daughter, Ella, decides to go to Purdue 4 years ago, which caught me, you know, off guard because I didn't see it. And then my wife breathed life back into this idea again. And she said, we got to do it now. And so as we're moving through it, it becomes a possibility to walk with my daughter. And once that was put on the table, I'm like, yeah, I'm in, right? And so I was able to take these few classes online that I had to finish up. And I tell you, man, it wasn't, you know, this physical geography kicked my butt, man. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't no joke, right? So I'm getting proctored quizzes during the week. I took it during the season, right? So I'm in my hotel room in the middle of the night trying to get these quizzes done, being proctored in front of the camera before midnight. So it was an experience, right? There were times when I, because of the technology world we're in now, right? I had everybody at the house working on something. My daughter, Ella's telling me how to, engage through the computer. And then I got my oldest daughter, who's a teacher, on the phone, right? Saying, okay, Dad, let's slow down. Let's get it done.
So you could have coached during this pandemic. You could have coached some of the students because you had already had this virtual experience, right?
I don't know about coaching students about school, but
I could have used some of the technology, right? But it's how important it is. You mentioned your wife and Ronnie Lott. How important when a legend transition, are their spouse and their former teammates?
Yeah.
How important was that to you?
Well, and that's a great question, is, and I know for me, what I've grown to and matured to is the understanding of just how important relationships are, you know. And, you know, we tend to look back on our time as players, and we talk about the camaraderie, the locker room. And the reality is that's relationships. We're talking about the relationships that get formed in those environments under the stress of the business and the pressure and all that you go through to perform and be on a stage at the highest level. It's those relationships really that, you know, that build us, that become who we are. And so for sure, for me, you know, I have lifelong relationships built out of football and sports and all of those, you know, memories and experiences that we have together. And the family is, you know, the epitome of that, you know, in terms of what it's about and supporting one another and loving one another and getting through the very difficult times and enjoying all of the great experiences that come along with family. So it is, the support system is unbelievable. And as you know, a lot of our teammates and other alumni have struggled deeply with the emotion, you know, the emotional scars of the business, you know, and it's really not the business. These emotional scars just happen in life, you know, and ours, you know, come out of, you know, maybe a profession, but we have a whole society of folks that are dealing with some really rough emotions that need all of our support.
Now, you took advantage, you mentioned earlier, you took advantage of some tuition reimbursement that the Niners actually had established there.
Yeah.
Or did you take advantage also of some of the tuition reimbursement that the league offers to legends?
Yeah, I mean, there's some great programs that are out there. And I, you know, remember way back when Dr. Harry Edwards and Bill Walls put in place in our building something that wasn't universal around the league, right? So player programs, player engagement all kind of grew out of these ideas that Dr. Edwards and Bill formulated at our team. Mm-hmm. And it's been wonderful to see the history of, you know, player programs, player engagement be standardized around the league, where there's these a host of resources that support players in a variety of ways. And in one of those ways is the reimbursement program that's set up around tuition, further education, degree completion, all of those kinds of things that players are encouraged, incentivized to do. And I just think it's a wonderful program and done in a very nice way.
Would you say going back, getting your degree played a role in even the position that you're in now, special assistant to a friend of mine, general manager John Lynch, inductee this summer into the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Do you think that played a role?
Well, for sure. You know, I was fortunate that I met John when I had those 3 years at Stanford. And so I've known John for a long time and so thankful that Bill Walsh talked him into coming back to Stanford for his fifth year. As you know, he had a baseball career ahead of him that he could have chosen.
I didn't know that.
Bill talked John into coming back to Stanford for a fifth year, putting off the baseball. And John was unbelievable. We were 10-3 that first year at Stanford and, you know, beat Penn State in a Blockbuster Bowl or something like that. And John went on and had obviously this Hall of Fame career. So I've known John for a long time and always had great appreciation for the athlete, football player that he was not surprised at the career he put together. And like you, man, I mean, he is this dude. You can't find a better man, a better leader than this dude. And so my relationship with him is absolutely a positive influence on, you know, the direction of my life, how I treat others, because he walks the talk, right? You know, a lot of us can talk about who we are and what we are, but it ends up being how you walk that talk, right? You know, who you are every day. And he, like you, is a guy that is who he says he is who he's, who you see, and for sure has made me a better, better employee, a better man, and definitely a better father when you look at a guy like him and the influence he has had.
You know, briefly, Keenan, John got the job having no GM experience, and I don't know how much front office experience he has. So there were people talking. What do you attribute to John being successful, maybe not having some of the experiences that others have gone through, what they call sweat equity, going through the business? What attributes have you seen would cause him to be successful in that position now?
Well, you know, a few things that I look at in this is you got to be bright. You know, you've got to be a bright guy that can look at situations, take information in, be decisive, and be able to communicate with people. And so John has a skill set, right, that has to do with, you know, smart enough to, you know what he knows, know what he doesn't know. And he brought a perspective, right? He brought a 14-year career of playing. He brought a, you know, 10-year career of kind of watching the game and talking about the game. And then he brought the ability to have relationships and communicate with people. And here's the other thing that I think is hugely important. You know, John is not an insecure guy when it comes to having bright, qualified, competent people working with him. He's inclusive. Okay, he's inclusive. He wants your input. He wants your ideas. Now, it's his job to make the decision, but he is looking to include folks in the process. And that's important. He's supportive. He has a lot of qualities that you're looking for, right? And especially in today's game, man, when you've got individual athletes that have a voice, that need to be heard, that need to be understood, and need to be supported, they need to be led, they need to be directed, they need to be pulled, they need to be pushed. And
that's a lot.
You got to do it. Hey, man, it's a big job. It's a big job, baby. And so, yeah, man, there's a lot going on. And now you got social media that don't let nothing go by.
Right.
So there's a lot going on, man, and you got to be able to handle and manage the whole pie. It ain't just picking the right guy. There's a lot to it.
And I didn't know about John's baseball career, and one of the things he had the opportunity to throw the first pitch in the history of the Miami Marlins franchise. So
right.
I'll next time I get with him, I'll have him throw a pitch so I can hit it out the park, because I was a good hitter.
Yeah, to get the clock on that, because I'm curious. You know, he still may say he can go a hunt or something.
Exactly. You know, Keenan, as we close this out, so your daughter Sheena, who went to USC? Was it Sheena?
Yeah, my oldest daughter Sheena went to SC.
Right,
yeah.
And Ella to Purdue, and then right. Your son is playing basketball at the University of Portland?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. So he's the baby, and so we'll see what happens next year for him.
Wow. Well, give him, I'm the baby too, so give him a fist pump for me, all right?
Definitely do that.
Keenan, this has been outstanding. I've always had just every time I've heard your name and seen you play and that entire team, man, thank you. You know, all of us that came behind you guys stand on y'all's shoulders, man. So thank you for being with us, and the best is yet to come, my man.
I appreciate that, Aeneas. You be well, my friend. Keep doing what you're doing. Stay out front.
Tell John and Dr. Harry I say hello.
Will do.
To provide feedback or request a topic for discussion, email us at nfllegends@nfl.com.